Hola.
Bonjour.
Ni hao.
Privet.
Konnichiwa.
Welcome to the Normal Not Normal podcast with myself, James Phelps.
And me, Oliver Phelps. And in this series, we're talking to some of our favourite people to find out what normal means to them and to ask, well, does normal even exist?
And today we're so excited to be talking to somebody that we've known for a very long time, a good friend of ours and probably the entertainment industry's leading costume designer, Jani Tamim. Now, she's worked on 6 of the 8 Harry Potter films, coming on in the 3rd film, The Prisoner of Azkaban. And she's also known for her work in Skyfall and Spectre, the James Bond films, Gravity with George Clooney and Sandra Bullock, just to name a few.
Yeah, and obviously we're so happy to be speaking to Jani, and we hope you guys really enjoy the conversation and learning stuff about the whole costume side of things, which even we didn't really know, to be honest with you. So we hope you have an amazing time in today's show. But just a quick one, right? So going back, obviously, last week's episode, the fan interaction episode, thank you for your participation in there if you were featured. But there was also, we obviously mentioned the reunion, and it's quite funny how in recent weeks, obviously the reunion came out, and I'm sure everyone really, really enjoyed it, because we did. It was great actually being part of it. But a few things happened, right? So I put this, I was watching it, and I noticed that the title editor had got our names.
Quite a few people noticed this faux pas as well.
They did, yes. Got our names the wrong way round, which I was kind of a bit like, well, I'll be honest with you, I was pretty annoyed with it. But how you can make a good thing from a bad situation type thing is make a bit of a lightheartedness about it. So I put a message out on Instagram of it. And yeah, it went pretty viral, which is quite a nice thing, I suppose. And they did change it. I found out later from someone telling me that they changed it. But I just want to address something that, unfortunately, stuff like that happens to twins all over the world, that people can't be bothered to just check what's going on properly. Whether they're in a rush to do stuff, I don't know. So we're not saying that anyone did anything deliberately. But what I would suggest is that stuff like this happens. It's happened to us before. It'll probably happen to us again. But it probably happens to a lot of other identical twins out there all over the world.
Well, how many times have we turned up to do a job, and if we're staying in a different location or in a hotel, we get there and they've only booked one hotel room with twin beds where everyone else has got their own, or we're sharing a trailer or something like that, and everybody else isn't, and it's just a bit frustrating every so often. And I was really happy to see as well everyone else's reactions as well to it. So thank you very much for everybody for having our back in that regard. But back to our chat with Jani. It was wonderful to catch up with her and revisit some amazing costumes that she put together for us in all of the Harry Potter films that she was a part of. She's an amazing person to work with, very funny. So without much further ado, here's Jani.
Bonjour, Jani, ça va?
Bonjour, James, ça va? It's the first time I hear you speaking French. In 10 years, you never spoke French to me. And now you do. You did grow.
I've been practicing so hard. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jani. I know you've got a very tight schedule at the moment, but we really do appreciate it. So I remember the first time we met was at our first costume fitting for The Prisoner of Azkaban. And I still remember to this day that the costume that was decided was the ones for the Marauder's Map scene, which was kind of like Oliver and my first big scene in the whole series. So it was quite a build up to it. And it was such a fun process of going through. And I will always remember that day going in and meeting you for the first time. But I have to say my favourite costume of the entire series that Fred and George had was the suits in the 6th film.
Yes.
For the Weasley Wizard Weezers.
Well, I must say that is one of my best costumes for you both. It was maybe the end one, but it was the one that I prefer of all of them. Although we had some little beauties. I remember the sweater with the check, the shirt. We had some little beauties because we could really let go with you both. I remember having so much fun dressing you both and dressing Rupert. I enjoyed the Weasley tremendously because with the Weasley, we could really go crazy. Remember, we did some beauties. I mean, every time I was fitting you or fitting Ron, in a way, I was feeling very sorry. Because I was giving you ideas things. But you were always so willing to wear them. You were so enthusiastic about every single horror I could give you. That was so nice.
I was going to say, I think it's when you were, I think playing those characters especially, they were very much, they made do with what was coming at them. And it was just nice that we could actually see them almost getting away from, especially from the third movie onwards, the style changed in terms of how the kids wore their uniform and stuff like that. So did you have a particular vision that that's what the kids would look like, almost very realistically to what my senior school was, where some kids didn't do their top button up on their tie and would just leave it?
You know, I thought that to going back to your normal thing, I thought that the kids should look normal, which means that by normal that a lot of kids could recognize themselves into you, into the school, that it was not a foreign world. It was a world which was next to you, around you, but they had special gift. So although they were completely normal children, they were normal children with special gift, which was the idea that Alfonso and I developed to present Hogwarts like something which could be very near you and very reachable. And I had to express that in your costume, which means that I had to dress you almost normally, but you didn't see the world the same way that somebody else was seeing the world. And that was very important to show that that world was magical because it was fun and interesting and maybe not so normal after all, but, you know, what is normal?
Well, that's it. And I think especially like how the... Even like the Quidditch uniforms, how that changed.
Yeah.
And you can kind of see like the development with that type of style. Again, it almost, to me, it took more of a, I suppose, like a football, like a soccer style.
It was football. It was, you know, it's the team of Hogwarts. And whatever you fly on a boomstick to get the ball or you run, what's the difference? You still have to get that ball and you have to throw it. I mean, I never understood the Quidditch rules. I don't think you did either. Nobody did. It was much too complicated for us, you know. They were flying, not remember, on those very high machines. But you did have to put that ball somewhere. Let's push it that way. And you had to do that flying on that broomstick, which was then a construction, remember, on top of a pillar like that. It was very complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my inspiration was always modern shapes, nylon, football, things which were that the kids knew. And then from that on, giving it always a little magical touch, which means let go to our fantasy to develop it. But the base of the design was always reality, contemporary reality, or even historical reality, but always putting it, making it accessible to a public of, I don't know which year it was then, to see it, enjoy it, and find some point of relativity, to relativate with image that they knew, not something that you pick up in an historic book or in a book. No, your world was next door.
I mean, is there a costume that stands out to you as your personal favourite, not necessarily from like our characters, but on the whole spectrum of all the costumes that you designed on the Potter films?
Well, I love Beatrix because she's a baddie, and I love baddies. You know, they're much more interesting than normal people. Get normal. She's bad. She's very sexy bad, which we like. And then you in your suit. Your suit were amazing because I think the suit were completely fitting in that shop. You know, it was a shop, it was a suit, it was you. Everything was like going up. And little shoulder going up, the stripe going up, your pointed shirt. I think it was brilliant. I really loved your suits and Beatrix, everything from Beatrix. But it's funny because my fan for you are completely different than the fan I have for Beatrix. I've got a whole sort of SM group to follow Beatrix. And then I have a whole sort of romantic following you. So that's very different group. You know, they don't match.
I never really thought about it that way, but I suppose,
you don't.
There is that element too, isn't there?
Yeah.
our producer has got a few screenshots from the films lined up. Could you talk us through one or two of them at all, if we can show you them?
My God, you're so young. Look at you, you babies.
Hello. So for those of you listening, we're actually looking at a picture now of... It's from the Prisoner of Azkaban film, when Fred and George give Harry the Marauder's map. And they're wearing a... How would you describe that, James? Like a raincoat type thing and a bobble hat.
What's really worrying is I actually bought a woolly hat similar to that recently. So I'm wondering if my fashion sense is borderline Weasley now.
I always remember it was the hottest day of the year when we filmed that as well. So we're really happy to be in woolly hats and everything inside a
soundstage. Yes, but don't you remember that Mama was knitting? Ma Weasley is a great knitter. So she has been knitting those hats for you. That was the idea. And you were looking extremely cute with the pompons. Very cute. So yeah. I really love that. And of course, the hood. The hood, that is really the witchy details of you. And then the fact, and that is, if you look at the picture, how strong and powerful and above everything you are, even if you wear those silly hats. You know, your attitude doesn't change. You do have an attitude. Huh? You are wearing a silly hat. Who cares? We are we. Mm. That was great.
Yeah. I still remember that the costumes. I know it's, I think unless you've been in a situation, it's hard to understand, but definitely the costume does help for myself as an actor. It definitely helps me feel a lot more in role with the character.
Yes.
And like you said, giving them a bit more, it's not even a rebellious costume, but it's just like a this is who we are kind of costume.
Oh, yes.
That particular one especially.
You were in Hogwarts, you were the popular guy. You know, you are. The kids loves you. The kids look up to you, and you wear silly hats, and they enjoy that. They are expecting you to be different. You remember your place in the group was very much like, we cool. You cool.
Yeah.
So you know you can afford a little bit of silliness because you're so cool. Are you still like that? I don't know if you're still like that.
I still stand by that.
I'd like to think so. I don't think I quite have the same schwab as those guys did when they came to, portray what they wear and stuff. But you know when you joined Potter on the Prisoner of Azkaban, what was it like for you coming onto a, because most of the crew were already established as well as the cast. Was it easier because Alfonso was new as well?
Alfonso took me in.
Right.
It's Alfonso who took me in because he wanted to not to jazz it up, but to actualize it. He didn't want to have, maybe because I was French and Mexican, so we had this thing together. He knew my work and I knew his work. And I don't think he wanted to have something cute. And he knew I couldn't do cute. So I think, hey, that's why he took me. He took me also because I told him that I didn't like the sort of Christmas Carol feeling of the film. And I think the film should be hard. I mean, it's a story of kids which have not difficulty, but because they are special, because they have gifts. First, they belong to a society which is a secret society. So it's difficult for a kid to belong to a minority, whatever minority it is. And then on top of that, they are gifted kids. So they are outsiders. And it was much more interesting to make a film about a story of kids which are outsider with difficulties to integrate in a normal society. That was a much nicer subject than to make a Christmas Carol, with the snow snowing on the back, you know what I mean? Mm. So we did that film, and that's why Prisoner of Azkaban is a masterpiece.
Yeah, I still think it's probably my favorite Potter.
Oh, it is. It's my favorite. Because it's very determining about a change of personality. You know, the kids going from childhood to teenager, it's a very difficult time. It's a key time for all of you, because you were also puber. Remember when we were talking about girls, you were all giggling like that. Remember? I remember. Mm-hmm. Of course you don't remember, but I do. And then you had all this little affair with each other. Who kissed who? Who was? Remember? You were puber playing puber with just 1 year difference to make it a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why the film also is the most interesting one. mm-hmm. because it caught you on a very special moment of your life.
Yeah, and I always think because you're trying to, at that age, you're still trying to work out who you are.
Exactly. Yeah.
And what are you doing? What are you trying to? Who do I want to be? What personas do I want to put out? So sometimes when you were, so in our case, when we were told, right, you guys can play the popular, outgoing, whatever attitude they have, that was actually quite liberating for us, because I suppose growing up we were quite reserved to an extent, like being thought, okay, we'll keep it down a bit. But whereas, as you said earlier, with their costumes for that scene with the bubble hats, they don't care. They are who they are. Yeah.
I mean, with their parents, they had to really. For you as actor, it must have been also a difficult moment, suddenly becoming so successful and having people recognizing you in the streets and having all this fan mail. How was it for you, just caught in that crazy, successful trip? So how did you cope with that? Was it easy?
I suppose we were very lucky, obviously, because of our family and friends were very keen to keep us grounded and all that, like not remind us exactly, you know, where we are, and we're just how lucky we are to be in that position. But I think because there was such a big cast of us going through a similar experience, no matter where you are from the world, you're all in the same boat when you came back to film. So it wasn't like anyone could ever get above their station, because everybody else would bring them back down. So I think everybody kept each other in check, which would definitely helped.
Yeah, you were very grounded as kids. I remember that. You're very, very strong, very sure of yourself. You were not attacked by the success of, you were staying yourself. You stayed yourself all the time. And that was something that I remember and appreciate.
No, thank you very much. Talking about being grounded, I remember that in the fifth movie, our school trousers were from Harrods.
I do.
I remember
but
that.
But at that time, Harrods had the best department for school uniform, because they were selling school uniforms. I mean, Sainsbury was saying polyester thing, which I didn't want, because I thought that Hogwarts is a school with money, not that your family had money, but it's a school with money, it's a private school.
Yeah.
And Harrods was having all the school uniform from private school. So when I wanted to go and pitch some interesting design element, I was going there and I could pick up different trousers, different shape of trousers, because I do wanted to mix a certain classicism with a certain fantasy, because if you start with a classical trouser, you can always make it fancy, you know, by making it too short, but you have to start with a very good shape. We had to make 1,000 of them, you know, we had to put them in a factory. So when we had a good pattern to start with, and Harold was a good synonym of quality.
Right. I never thought about that, actually.
Neither did I, my love, neither did I, but I was just looking for where can I find 6 shape of trouser from boarding school, and from boarding school, from classical school. And when I was going there, it was like, wow, Alibaba, you know, you had all those schools, different things, different shape of, and that's where I got the skirt of the girl, your trousers, yours.
Yeah.
And then after that, we were manufacturing them, don't know where, but thousands.
I was going to say, it wasn't like you walked into Knightsbridge and said, I'll have 600 of those.
No, never, never. You might have had a good one, but all your colleagues, which were not in the front, the other one, they had the factory one, but based on your pattern. So, you know, they had a little bit of Harrods. They had the S of Harrods, let's put it that
way. Right. So I guess that's the thing that people don't realise, all that detail that goes into it, because like a lot of Fred and all the Weasley stuff, they were all made to look old and hand-me-downs, like the school gyms had a hole or so in it, the gowns, the robes always had, like they were really battered. Like, how long would that process take you guys to do?
Long. I mean, I remember Ron and you, because you were the same family, you all had very expensive things that we were beating up, burning, dirty, using, dying, because I always wanted to put a fantasy element in it. I remember a Dolce & Gabbana sweater, what you had, both of you, which was costing a fortune, multiplied by 10 as everything you had, or 6, or I mean, yeah, for you, 5 and 5, so 10. And then putting it through a dirty yellow wash, and then after that, putting holes in it that we repaired, and that sweater, you know, already started at £400, going to £600 or £700 with the work. Your costume were very expensive, because it's, you know, like somebody said, it's hard to look so cheap, but it is really very difficult to look. To have shape that nobody else have, it's quite expensive. You were very high maintenance, the Weasley twins.
Yeah, I mean, I've just shown one now when we're at the Quidditch World Cup. Very suave, very, very suave.
So this image is from the fourth film, The Goblet of Fire, specifically near the beginning of the movie when the Weasleys and Harry are going to the Quidditch World Cup. And Fred and George are wearing, what do you say, like a, there's definitely a green turtleneck.
Cardigan. With some bright orange, I suppose, flared bootcut trousers, a green T-shirt, and some shoes with that. It's not quite on par with Mr. Weasley's, I see, sandals and socks, but it's you'd notice them coming anyway, wouldn't you?
Actually, well, just looking at that photograph, everybody else in the picture is dressed pretty much you could get away with walking down the street and no one looking twice.
Aren't you great? Aren't you great? Look at that. Look at that.
I remember that. They were the comfiest trousers I've ever worn. I remember that.
They were. And I promise you, they were. Those were expensive. Your T-shirt were not expensive. The sweater was expensive-ish, but the trousers were expensive. I remember that. And the color, yeah. I mean. And you know what was very difficult for us? It was usually when we were not buying very expensive for you, we were buying the leftover that nobody else wanted. You know, like if you go to a shop and then they make the trouser in 5 color, it's always going to be a color that doesn't sell, like that yellow orange. And then I was always picking that up for you. And so it was quite difficult to get all the repeats that you needed, because they were the one that people didn't want. So there were not so many of them. And we had to go all around the world. I remember a Gap sweater that you had. And we had to go to pick them up, to pick all the repeats abroad, like really abroad, like Asia, America, you know, to be able to get the 30 repeat that you needed. I cannot remember for what it was, but I remember a lot of repeat, and we had somebody just doing that, getting all those ugly bits. I'm sorry to say that. In the amount we needed for you. But you look great, you know, and also the shape. I always wanted to accentuate your body, which was very long and thin, you know, like you grew, you shoot up. And then, so this sweater, I made smaller here to be able to have the good thin body and too long. I think it's brilliant. Those sweaters are brilliant.
It was certainly a good look, actually. I think I always think that, like, especially when the, I suppose more so with the Weasley side of things, but certainly from the fourth film onwards, you saw the more social side of the Weasley family. So I suppose there was more cool to see them in civilian outfits like that. But I remember having a costume fitting on for one of the later films. I think it was the sixth movie. And I remember mentioning that, well, Fred and George probably wouldn't wear the exact same colours anymore, being that they're older and they've left school and stuff. So I think from then on, they had pretty much the same outfits, but different colours. Like when an actor says that, does that help or hinder your process, your work?
You're right, but I always have been trying to not dress you exactly the same, but complementary, because I thought that your mother could never buy two things the same. She was so, you know, special. So I thought she find a sweater yellow and red, and then she buys it for him in red and yellow. You know what I mean? So
yes.
I always tried to find that it was a little bit different, looking alike, but different. But in those suit, by the time I thought, well, you are grown up, you have your own choice. So you keep the principe of Ma Weasley. You want to dress same style because you are twins and you are so much like two person on one pod, and you are going to find to buy yourself the same thing because you had that aesthetic training. So you will buy the suit with the same sort of stripe, trying to be different, but not succeeding in being different.
Yeah.
And those suits are perfect.
And for those of you listening, this picture that we're looking at now is from the sixth movie when we're in Weasley's Wizarding Wheezes and you see Fred and George in their elaborate suits that they have made up.
And you remember the little M with the light going up and down?
Yes.
From your shop? You know, they are now selling them in the Harry Potter shop. But I think that little M with the light flashing, that was a big thing. The props did that for us. And it was quite complicated with a battery on the back. I mean, it was, my IG were always complicated. But this little M was brilliant. Do you remember that M on your tie?
Yeah, I remember they used to have to change the battery, didn't they?
Ah, oui,
the battery. When we were filming. Make sure it was working.
Is that something which you ever have to bring into consideration, like any little props that need to go on a costume or sound department or anything, or do you expect them to work it around your designs?
I choose to ignore that sort of difficult details, yeah. You know, because if you start taking them in consideration, that's not fun. So I thought, oh, they managed. They were brilliant and they managed. Oh, look at that. I love the W. I love that. Yeah. I love your big tie like that. I think it's fantastic. You look so cool. I mean, you look brilliant.
It's funny. I still remember the design, how it was, let's exaggerate all the, like the lapels and the shoulders and all that kind of thing. It was such a different experience to what I've ever had having a suit fitting before. So it was really fun.
Oh, but you were good looking. And look at that. You're brilliant. And in the shop, it's fantastic. But the shop was amazing as well. Remember the shop with all the little...
Oh, yeah. It was I still think it was my favourite set to film on.
Yes.
Just purely because there was so much going on, both internal and externally as well.
But look at the balcony on the back with that red, yellow, orange. It's exactly the color of your suit. They were really, it was symbiosis, the two of them. It's brilliant. It's really, really, really good. I think that while we were making those films, we didn't realize how brilliant we were. Luckily, because if not, it would have been unbearable. Mm. But when I'm looking at it now, and I look just at that picture, come on. I mean, it's a poster in itself. Your expression, you're great. Brilliant. It is brilliant.
Changing slightly as well now on the fact of going from these suits to when you worked on Gravity in spacesuits. Obviously, they're a bit different in terms of design and stuff like that.
A bit.
But how much creative freedom did you have on that type of thing?
Well, yeah, a lot, because I felt like I was working for NASA, because I had to design suits, and they're completely fake, you know. They are not realistic at all. Not so much the Clooney suit. That was almost a copy, but not really, because I had to adapt it to his body, because he wanted to have longer leg. Who doesn't? So I had to put up a line a little bit higher. But Sandra's suit is completely a fantasy because it had to open in the front that she could get out of it.
Yeah, I suppose spacesuits are from the back, aren't they?
Exactly, yeah, exactly. So it was completely fake. But when the film came out, I thought nobody would see that. And almost nobody saw it. But some people were working in those somewhere. And it's a magazine, which though you don't read, I don't read, which is called, I don't know what it's called. Peu importe, it's not the Daily Prophet. And this magazine, very serious magazine, wrote a critique about my costumes. And they said that although that suit was completely wrong because no astronaut will have blah, 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 it was quite ingenious. And they will remember, I don't know which detail, which for me was completely aesthetic, a zipper there or thing there, because it could help, blah, 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 something scientific I don't understand, but that they appreciated more than me, because for me it was a complete casualty based on how look she was in it, but for them it was quite clever. So you see.
Hey. Well, I suppose if you wanted to take a sabbatical from film work, you could always pop over to NASA for a year and help them out with the design.
Please not. Please not. Please not. That was a nightmare. That was really a nightmare. It was really a very difficult film to see. And everybody said, oh, two costumes. I never worked so hard on that film. It was horrible. Mm. We had to do suit behind to constrain their movement.
Yeah.
With some elastic to stop the actors to move normally.
Oh, wow.
That was Alfonso Haiti, of course. So, you know, to not, so they couldn't put the hand like that. They had to pull up their hand very softly and their foot very slowly because they were caught inside by all elastic and, oh, you don't want to know. Very complicated.
Well, yeah.
Very complicated. 16 different shades of white to get the same suit with a different light. Don't even talk about it. It's a nightmare. No, well. Nightmare. I much prefer your suit. That was easier.
Yeah. It's a little bit easier.
and more fun.
Obviously, you've gone on and worked on Skyfall and Spectre. I'm a huge Bond fan, so that was really cool to see when...
I enjoyed it very much.
I was wondering, like, so... Originally, you may think, like, from someone looking in, you may think, well, Bond just wears a suit. But I know that you worked very, you put your own stamp on how the suit was, how he wore it, right?
Yeah. I really wanted the suit to be very physical, you know. I wanted to be the suit to make one with Daniel's body, you know, because Daniel Craig is somebody who walk, jump, and trains a lot. And the way he was playing Bond was very physical. He was using his body. He was not using his smile. No, he was using his body. He was running, and you could see the muscle where he was running. So I wanted a suit which was very, very fitted. And they made it brilliantly. We had three or four fittings, because it was hard. But then they could see that it was sexier and sexier, and they could see that they were developing another market, you know, the guy being sexy in a suit. And it worked. They made them specially for me. It was not the normal shape of Tom Ford. He had guys coming specially. I mean, the cutter came from Italy, and then the Italian, they like that sort of thing. So they remade it for us. We work hard on the suit. And then I wanted the tuxedo to be dark blue and not black. And then they sold, I don't know, 20,000 of dark blue tuxedo. Everybody was getting married in a dark blue tuxedo. Did you get married? they were quite happy about it. And then, fine, they loved me.
a genuine trendsetter then, in more than that way, isn't it? So, but again, I think that type of thing, people kind of, I suppose, an ignorant person would look and say, oh, they've got a suit off a rack or something like that. But as you say, it's exaggerating everything what's around it.
Obviously, they're not just looking at how Daniel Craig was dressed, but obviously you kind of brought in a new modern Bond girl look instead of them just wearing essentially like a bikini or something like that. It was a very more modern thing. Was that something which you were told to bring in, or was that something which you did yourself?
Yeah, together, you know. I mean, I did the two Bond that Sam Mendes directed, so... he had an idea about the new sort of Bond girl, and it had to be like that. You cannot anymore. I mean, I don't know if you know that, but every single Bond girl died. And still, they keep off having sex with Bond. They have sex and they die. They have sex and they die. You know, this is the destiny of a blonde girl. And the only one who survived is the last one. She didn't die after having sex with him. So... because she survived, she had to be, in a way, she had to be stronger than the rest. And she's stronger because she has her own job, because she's a woman, she has a job, she's clever, she's on same level than he is. Sort of gender equality between Bond and his girl, which make the whole story moderner, I think. Mm. I'm talking about Skyfall and Spectre. You know, they... especially in Spectre, the women are strong.
Yeah.
M died, but, you know, she was a strong woman. And then after that, I think you cannot have the same image of woman that you had in the 70s or in the 80s or in the 90s. Because the women are stronger men. And then you have to show that. And then you have to be able to have a sort of equality between Bond and his girls. And we made it. It's good. I think it's was the only way of to progress.
What was it that made you want to get into being a costume designer, Jenny?
I always wanted it. always. From my 4 years old, I was dressing my dolls. I was having my playing with the dolls. You know, some bougie was killing the other always, and the other one was pulling up. And then, you know, I always created little thing, did costume for that. It really looks very, very, very kitsch to say that, but I always wanted to become a costume designer, and I became a costume designer. I started with fashion, and then from fashion, I went to cinema.
Right.
Boring.
Well, no, not really, because it shows, as you say, like you've got that. And were you very hands-on originally in terms of like the making of the costumes and stuff like that?
I was very hands-on. When I was at school, university, I was making clothes for the people, selling them. I was always in that. I always wanted to do that. Yeah. But my parents were in fashion, so maybe that was easy. But it was not so easy because I started, they wanted me to be a teacher because it was not fashion was not a job. So I wanted to be a teacher. So I studied, I got a master in French, and then I used that to get into Elle magazine. I spent 6 months in Elle magazine. I fell in love with an actor and I started in film business.
Wow.
So, you know.
Yeah.
I went back to what I wanted to do. That's what I wanted to tell you, that when you really want something, you have to fight for it. And somehow it happened.
Mm.
But you have to think, this is what I want. Me is important.
Yeah, and I suppose especially to move as well, like move countries for work and all that type of thing as well. It's
Oh, yeah. But what's a country? Especially when you work in film. A country is nothing. A country, I change of country so many times. I don't have a problem changing country. I set up my world, set on my tent, and I set up my world everywhere. I suppose I moved a country when I was 12, you know. I was born in Algeria, and then it was the French colony. It was not anymore a French colony. So when I was 12 years old, we moved to Paris. So because I did it when I was so young, I lost the world and I created another world. I think it's quite easy after that. I lived in Paris, and I lived in Holland, and from Holland I came to England. And what's next? I don't know.
That's a question, Jenny. What is next? What are you working on right now?
I'm doing Game of Thrones.
Cool.
Game of Thrones. So I'm in Armors. Yeah.
I was going to say. So you're actually in the studio right now, by the look of
it,
as well.
Yeah, I'm in the studio right away. I'm in Leavesden. Remember Leavesden, where we did.
I couldn't get over how different it is though when I went back to when we were
filming. When we were there, it was the zone. Remember, we had this big bucket with the rain coming from the ceiling, and now it's like a small Hollywood. Do you know, I've got a buggy with my name on, and I go from A to B with a buggy. It's not anymore the walk in the rain, in the mud. I mean, it's still a little bit like that on the back lot, but basically, it's very glamorous now. They waited that we were gone to start building it.
I remember our very last scene filming, they had the bulldozers were literally the other side of the wall.
Yeah.
Because the next day they were starting to rip the place down.
The minute we left, they started making it nice. we were used, you know, we dropped the rubber boots and bang, they started building. I know, I remember that. And I'm there now. That's where we are. And it's very big. But I'm finishing soon. And then I start with Alfonso Cuarón.
Oh, brilliant.
I start doing six film with Alfonso. So you see.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Please say hello to him from us.
I'm very faithful to you, to people. I'm very, very faithful. I always love the same people, keep them. Do you have good relationship with other people of Harry Potter? Are you still seeing them? Other actors?
I think for the most part. It's the way that I always describe to people is a bit like school friends.
Yeah.
Like you've got some that you're really close with, and then they'll still be in contact, so you'll know what's going on with everybody else and things like that.
It's funny. I mean, I see them occasionally. Sometimes I meet somebody, meet Danielle or Emma. Emma, I met when I was in Los Angeles. I saw a few times. Or Rupert, you know, I meet very occasionally. Occasionally, and it's always, you know, we were together in Orlando. It was so nice to see you, the babies. I loved it.
I think that's the thing as well. Like you see that because you haven't seen people for such a long period of time.
With whom I'm working. I'm working with Amanda, the makeup.
Oh, cool, Amanda.
Amanda, and then we kept on talking about you and about everybody, and then I'm working with her daughter. Her daughter is one of the makeup girls, and she used to run around the studio 4 years old. Remember, little bunny. And she's now one of the makeup girls. Yeah.
Okay,
it's incredible. It's another generation, you know, going back.
It is, yeah. So, Jeanne, I know that you're very giving of your time, but I know that you've got a meeting to be in a little while. So,
but it's so nice to see you. I enjoy it so much.
And you, if we could just finish, we've got a couple more questions, if that's okay. So first one is, I know you've already breezed on it, but what is the most normal thing about you?
I don't know any, to be honest. Maybe that I can enjoy seeing old friends and talking with you. Maybe that's normal. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Is it?
Yeah, I'd say so.
That'd be, and if that's the most normal, what would you say is the least normal?
The least normal. Everything in me is not completely normal. So what's the worst of it? I don't know. I think you have to ask that to my friend or to my husband. Maybe they would be able to answer you more than me.
I think that's like over the whole series of when we've been able to speak to people, like it's like where we found that like normality is pretty much your own world.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's your normal.
Yes. You feel normal when you are in your world. Yes, that's true.
Exactly, that's true. Yeah, exactly.
With
yeah,
people like exactly. you. Yeah.
So James always finishes, Jeanne, on a, he calls it his 3 a.m. questions because the answer sometimes comes to you if you can't sleep at 3 a.m. James, do you want to ask some of those?
Yeah, so it's just five questions of what is your favorite? So, Jeanne, what is your favorite book?
My favorite book? Oh, my love, is Proust. À la recherche du temps perdu. I don't know what's the...
So I've just been told by producer Alice that the English translation is In Search of Lost Time.
Et voilà. You said it better than me. Certainly. But that's my favorite book. I read that all the time. You know, the story of somebody, the society there, his own thing. And also a guy talking about that. I mean, Proust was... a gay man who was feeling completely... I like the story of outsider, people who don't feel completely well in their own world and look at it and manage to survive because they use all what was wrong in them as a strength. That's what I love so much in Harry Potter, actually. You know, that's what I love so much in the Weasley. Mm. And that's the same sort of things in Proust, because À la recherche du temps perdu is the story of a guy who is gay, Jewish, and evolutes in that French aristocracy and manage to become somebody that everybody appreciates.
So going from your favorite book, what is your favorite film?
Again, a French film. I'm sorry. And it's called Les 400 coups. It's a film of François Truffaut from the late 50s. And I think it's the 400 blow in English, the title. Les 400 coups, the 400 blow. And it was a film, again, about a boy, a young boy, who tried very hard to survive. No parents, nothing, and create his own world. A little Harry Potter. That was my inspiration for Harry Potter.
Ah, okay.
Dissocial Family, great film, black and white film.
Definitely going to have to watch that now.
What is your favorite food?
What the couscous from my origin.
And your favorite song?
My favorite song is All You Need Is Love.
Love it.
That was our opening song in our wedding. All you need is love. I love it.
I actually left when I got married to my wife. We left the church and the choir sang "All You Need Is Love."
Ah, voila! Isn't it a great song? All you need is love, and everybody.
Yeah.
And when you sing "All You Need Is Love," everybody is singing with you, which is great.
Yeah,
you start all you never, and you have three people sing "All You Need" beyond the background. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny because there was other people in the congregation who were doing it.
You have a better voice than me, but that's easy. Okay.
And finally, Jeanne, what is your favorite quote?
Tomorrow is another day.
Very good.
Very nice.
I like that one.
Very nice.
That's very good. Well, Jeanne, again, thank you so much for your time. We really do appreciate it. And it's lovely to speak to you again.
Oh, it was so nice. It was so nice. Mwah! Really, it was so nice seeing you both. You look so good. You look so beautiful. I love it. I love you.
And so do you.
No, thanks very much. Keep up the good work, Jeanne.
Bye-bye, les chéris. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Cool. Thank you. See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Merci, au revoir.
How great was that?
Very good. I, like I say, Jenny was always a great person when we were filming to, if you had any questions about the costume or anything, to speak to, because as you can tell, she's very passionate about her job and very, very good. I remember that the costumes that she had on whenever we went for costume fittings, there was literally a huge rack of clothes. Previous to filming, you'd have gone for a costume fitting, and that costume fitting would probably have taken 2 or 3 hours of 7 or 8 different variations of tops, bottoms, trousers, you name it, we tried it on. And I think that was, people never believe this, that the Hogwarts trousers were from Harrods. And then like Jenny was saying, like we had a D&G jumper, which was a horrible thing as well, wasn't it? That one, I don't know how they...
It was definitely one of those things where they say, you know, it's fashion, darling, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
And like, you've got to be really thinking good about yourself to wear said sweater.
But I did, I loved her quote that she came out with, which was, it costs a lot of money to look cheap.
So James, just getting on to one thing. So obviously you normally have your did you know facts.
Yes, I have a couple right here.
Come up. Right, okay. So before I get onto that, I was doing a Cameo Calls the other week, and a few of the guys who I was speaking to were telling me about this part of the segment of the show and asking about, you know, well, I've got some did you know facts or something for you. And Laura, right, she was currently in isolation, or at the time she was in isolation due to having COVID. So she actually came up with a fact, and it's, did you know the brain named itself?
Yeah, of course it did.
That's quite an interesting thing, because there's nothing else that names itself, is it? Shout out to Laura if you're listening, by the way, Laura.
Yeah, Laura, actually, that was a very good did you know.
Your input is valid.
It is valid. No, honestly, do you know, though, that's the kind of thing that you would just throw at a dinner party. Or that would be a good quiz question, wouldn't it?
What named itself?
What part of the body named itself? There. Pub quiz question. Right, on to my did you knows. So, since we're talking to Jenny, I thought I'd do did you knows about clothing and the histories of clothes, all that kind of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, think old school swimsuit, right? Specifically for females, mainly.
Okay.
Right. So,
How old school?
Well, 1907. So when you see like the old fashioned drawings of people at the seaside, and they'd be in like a onesie with stripes on.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So in 1907, there was an Australian swimmer and performer called Annette Kellerman, and she was on a beach in Boston. And she was arrested for wearing one because it was deemed too fitted, right? But then eventually it kind of came the norm. People started wearing them on the seaside more and more. And everything was going fine until the Miss World contest in London in 1951, when the bikini was worn for the first time. And it was deemed a sin by the Vatican. It was also banned in certain countries, such as Belgium, Italy, Spain, and ironically, Australia.
Which is amazing, really, when you think that a lot of those countries, not say, well, there are parts of Australia that would do it, but where just like nudism on the beach is just a done thing that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
But yet you put a little bit of underwear on or a little bit of bikini.
So then, anyway, going away from being at the seaside and clothes that you wear at the seaside, did you know, so Napoleon, right?
Mm.
Little man who, in history, he wasn't actually as small as everybody makes out. But anyway, the old emperor of France, he decided that he would have brass buttons sewn onto the sleeves of his soldiers on their uniform to discourage them from wiping their noses on the uniform.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
And
no way.
Did you? There you go. You see, that's something to.
I've got a related did you know for you.
Go on.
Did you know in France it's illegal to name a pig Napoleon?
It is. I didn't know that one. And here's one then. Here's a little question. Did you know? Can you tell me? Can you tell me the first ever designer logo?
What is in clothing designer?
Yeah. So you think of logos, and from 1933.
33. Okay. It's going to be something like Hugo Boss.
Nope.
Anyway, go on. I don't know.
So the first ever logo designed by a fashion company was Lacoste.
What, the crocodile?
The little crocodile. That was the first ever logo on clothing. There you are. There are my random did you know facts.
That's very good, isn't it? That's very good. Well, look, I mean, there's lots of stuff what goes on about on the podcast as well, and obviously people getting in touch. But I was chatting with Hayley as well, and Hayley was telling me how she listened to the podcast episode from the last season with Mercedes.
Also known as Sasha Banks.
She was saying that how she actually listened to that. She actually got into watching, especially Mercedes perform in the WWE, and her dad really enjoys it as well. And they actually went together as like a father-daughter day out to see it live. And that whole interest came from watching or listening to the show, our podcast episode with her. So I was very, very happy to hear that we were able to unite Hayley and her dad's interest in something mutual, which I'm very, very happy to hear.
Very much so. And also, a little random story. I was visiting some pals a couple of weeks ago, and I was out walking the dogs. And two people stopped, well, a family stopped me, and a mother and daughter, and they were saying how they both love listening to the show, love listening to the podcast. So, Annabelle, Pip, it was lovely to meet you the other day, and I hope you have an amazing rest of the year, and thank you very much for all your very kind words about the show and everybody involved. It really did make my day hearing that, so thank you so much.
Exactly. And also, while we're talking about interacting with people and speaking to people like that, I was out for a meal the other day, and the waitress casually said at the very end of my, as I was getting up to leave, said, "How come you don't rant too much anymore?" And I looked at her and I was like, "I don't know. Do you want me to do one right now?" But this got me thinking, right? Why is that not happening? I think it just became a bit too much last season. Did you?
Very much so. Anyway, thank you very much for not having a rant anymore. I think that's why.
I know. I'm losing my touch. Anyway, guys, whatever it is you're getting up to this week, stay safe, look out for one another, and thank you for joining us and also, obviously, your interactions with us. And remember to keep sending your story times, your questions, and your did you knows to the normal address, which is normalnotnormalpodcast@gmail.com. That's normalnotnormalpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, and if you've enjoyed this episode, please remember to tell everybody about it, that you've enjoyed it. And I'm going to have to say it this week, aren't I?
Do it.
Please remember to like, subscribe, and review. That sounded really sincere, didn't it?
Yeah, I know. Gosh, what was that?
Honestly, thank you very much for all the interaction with everybody. Like Olive said, if you want to get involved, send us an email, and we'll try and answer them on the fan interaction show, one of them coming next week. But until then, I've been James Phelps. Thank you very much, Annie, for joining us this week.
And I'm Oliver Phelps. Guys, stay safe, and we'll see you next week.
Normal Not Normal is a Stable production.